following message is from New Life Gillette series, Identity Politics. This week, Pastor Mike brings us part two of this series.
So, I have COVID, and many other people in our congregation have COVID. We are persevering through it, but because of that, we are not meeting together today, as you obviously can tell. It's not because I wanted to watch the Chiefs game. It's because I don't want to get my germs all over you. What you're about to watch is a pre-recorded version of my message that we recorded on Monday. Every week I practice my sermon in front of the staff and they tell me what I screwed up and what I need to change. That whole process did not happen. Mitch and Grant just recorded my practice. So what you're about to see is kind of the choppy, rough version of my message. Not like what you're used to seeing, but I hope you get a lot of out of it. So watch this.
I've titled today's message, Who to Vote For. And I hope you have a pen and paper ready because I'm about to list some candidates. Number one, Kanye 2020. No, not really. I'm guessing you know where I'm going with this. As Christians, who should we vote for? Answer, not yourself. Vote selflessly. Don't vote based on what will help you personally. And don't vote based on what will help people who are like you. Christians should vote for the agenda that will do the most good for the most people. And this honestly is going to take a little bit of math and a little bit of research. We have to be honest with ourselves and ask questions like, does abortion save more lives or does it hurt more lives or end more lives? We have to ask ourselves questions like, does religious liberty help more people or hurt more people? You got to figure out all this math, and you got to add it into your equation to figure out who you're going to vote for. You got to ask yourselves questions like, what is the best way to avoid and to end racism? You got to add all these things into your equation, do the math, and that's who we vote for. Our political agendas must always be focused on helping as many people as possible. Most politicians claim to do this. They claim to be wanting to help as many people as possible. But if we're honest, it is politicians who do not vote selflessly. It is politicians who do not act based on what will help the most number of people that popularizes phrases like the swamp. And it is what gives Washington and politicians such a bad name. Because let's be honest, self-focused voting is what is breaking America. It is what is breaking democracy because selfishness breaks democracy. Selfishness and the inability to delay gratification will kill democracy. If you'll allow me, I'd like here at the beginning to nerd out just a little bit about something that I've researched over the years. And it's that throughout history, capitalism has worked only when it has been managed well, only when it has been managed correctly. Capitalism works when customers are put first, when people are treated well and given the opportunity to pick their companies based on who treats them well. But in America today, if you look around, there is a new form of capitalism that is arising. It is a greedy, self-focused form of capitalism that instead of putting the customer first, puts the shareholder first. Our problem isn't capitalism, at least in a good form. Our problem is greed. In America, we have a rampant greed that is causing capitalism to be unhealthy. The salaries of most CEOs in America is based not on the approval of their customers, but on the stock price of their company. So it's in the CEO's best interest to focus on short-term gains, to focus on anything that could possibly boost their stock price this quarter. So if I have to do something that's going to make a bunch of people mad or it's going to harm a lot of people, but it'll help my stock price this quarter, then so be it. That's how we incentivize. But this system incentivizes neglect of the people who need it most. And it neglects the fact that throughout history, great leaders focused on long-term health of the company, not the short-term gain. Adam Smith is the 18th century Scottish economist that was widely credited for coming up with the type of capitalism that America was founded on. And Thomas Jefferson was a huge fan of Adam Smith. Thomas Jefferson owned all of his books, and this is what he said. He said, "Consumption is the sole end and purpose of all production, and the interest of the producers ought to be attended to only so far as it may be necessary for promoting that of the consumer. Consumption is the sole end and purpose of all production, and the interest of the producer ought to be attended to only so far as it may be necessary for promoting that of the consumer." The company's interest must be secondary. In the last decades of the 20th century, companies started to unapologetically put shareholders above consumers. In the 1970s, Milton Friedman convinced everyone to put shareholders first. That meant if you had to lay people off at the end of the year just to make it look like your balance sheet was better, just to abruptly prop up some financial goals, then you would do it. It didn't matter if that harmed the company in the long run. You do it because that's what's necessary this quarter. In 1978, the average CEO made 30 times the average worker's salary. In 2016, the average CEO made 271 times the average worker's salary. And all of this is what led to the Great Recession of 2008. Greed. I'm not saying that layoffs are evil. Sometimes they're necessary, but it is evil when it happens simply to get the CEO a bigger bonus at the end of the year. Just when it's done to help self, not sacrificially help others. In the 1950s, the average lifespan of a business was just over 60 years. Today, it's less than 20 years. And politics today has this same self-focused agenda. I'm going to do what is best for me and ignore how it affects everybody else. It's similar to the difference between what I call positive patriotism. This is what when we call ourselves patriotic, that's what we're talking about, or negative nationalism. Positive patriotism uses its power for benevolent good. America, throughout history, because of positive patriotism, has been one of the most benevolent goods in history. But negative nationalism uses it for personal gain. All the great patriotic stories that you love, all the legends of heroes are stories of people who sacrificed for others, who sacrificed for the greater good, who paid the ultimate price, not for themselves, but for something bigger than them. I am proud of America because of its benevolence, because of the good that it has done throughout the world, and because of the people who have laid down their lives for the greater good. I'm not proud of America when it has allowed greed and self-advancement to take away from the rest of the world. What were the greatest political decisions in history? What are the things that we look toward and we say, man, they did something good, and we're proud of them for that? Maybe it was when America chose democracy. We declared independence from Great Britain, and we launched an amazing experiment of democracy and of self-government. Maybe it was when America abolished slavery. But let's be honest, we were a little bit late to that game, but at least we got it done. Most of the other industrialized countries did this before we did. So we were a little late to the game, but we got it done, and we're proud of it. Maybe it was when America let women vote. Go Wyoming. America was a little late on this one too, but we got it done. But today I'd like to talk about a different political decision that was made 2,000 years ago. Jesus was praying and he was in the wilderness, and Satan appeared to him to tempt Jesus in the wilderness. And the story goes like this. Then the devil took Jesus to the peak of a very high mountain. And the devil showed Jesus all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. So Jesus can see all of the neediness in the world and all of the needs that need to be filled and all the people that have needs. He can see the division of Congress. He can see the rioting. He can see hunger. He can see injustice. Hey, Jesus, see all of that pain in the world? Wouldn't it be nice if you could just wipe it all away? Well, Satan said, I will give it all to you. He said, Jesus, just say yes. I mean, just imagine, what would it be like if Syria and North Korea were led by Jesus? If China and America were led by Jesus? Wouldn't you say that'd be a good place to live? I would. I want Jesus on the ballot on Tuesday. But we all know that offers like this, like the one that Jesus is giving to, or that Satan is giving to Jesus, always have a catch. And so Satan's saying, I will give it all to you if you will kneel down and worship me. Now let's be clear. Satan is offering something that is not his to offer. Satan is offering to Jesus something that he cannot actually deliver. It's like the government borrowing money from China to pay their debts and then giving it to you. Satan is making a promise he can't fulfill. Verse 10. Get out of here, Satan, Jesus told him. For the scriptures say, you must worship the Lord your God and serve only him. And in this, Jesus resisted one of the hardest temptations to resist. He chose to follow God rather than to obtain power. He chose to sacrifice power rather than to take power. And that's hard because it is much easier to play God than to actually be God. Jesus knew that love had the power to do what physical power could never do. With power, you can force someone to do something, but only love can build a relationship. With power, you can force someone to swear their allegiance to you, but only love can encourage someone to love you in return. Jesus never used his power to force us to love him. Jesus came as a defenseless child to live amongst us in servanthood. And guess what? It was that same kind of sacrificial love that started a movement that spread around the world like nothing ever has before. A movement that dominance could have never started. Jesus was right to give up power, but we have not learned from him often enough. Too often in our lives, we try to accumulate as much power as we can rather than choosing to love and draw people to ourselves. Instead, selfish politics uses power to control. How do you get a dog to obey you? You teach it who's in charge. You stand over it. You lord your power over it. You never get down on its level because you are teaching them that you are the boss. You are up here and he is down here. And selfish politics uses power for personal gain. And we all know people like this. We all know people who use power for personal gain. You've worked for people like this, haven't you? I've counseled people exactly like this. I am married to someone who knows people like this. But selfish politics uses power to impress. If I can get people clapping for me, then they'll follow me. If self-righteousness can impress people, then it starts to puff up. And before long, people are following the political opinions of celebrities. Oh, she's pretty. I'll just vote who she says I should vote for. Oh, he's a good singer. He must be someone to be trusted. Oh, he's an athlete. I bet he knows what he's talking about. Selfish politics uses victimhood to control. Our society has glorified victimhood. I'm not talking about actual victims or real victims. I'm talking about fakers. They think that if I whine enough, then I will whine you into submission. I will get you to do what I want you to do. And they use victimhood for power. But again, this is another short-term strategy. It does not work in the long run. Victimhood is never a victory. Has any of you ever played Settlers of Catan? It's pretty much like every other board game or competition. You're trying to get enough points to win the game. Well, in the game, there are these cards that if you get one of these cards, you're going to buy one of the cards. And if you get one of the cards, then you can play them in order to mess up the game of somebody else that's playing. And so if I think Darcy's going to win the game, then I will start taking the penalty cards and giving them to her and messing up her game and robbing from her. And so what ends up happening is in the game is people start trying to convince everybody that they're losing. You hide your points and you hide how good you're doing, trying to convince everybody that you're losing when in all reality, you are winning. Everybody pretends to be a victim when in reality, they have the power. I think this is what a lot of people in our society do today. If I can convince you that I'm a victim, if I can convince you that I am oppressed, if I can convince you that I have less than what I have, then I can use that victimhood for power. I can use that victimhood for personal promotion. I think this is just as bad as the politicians who are using their power for personal gain. They do it saying that they're doing it to help other people. They do it while talking about how it's so hard for them, yet they're doing it for personal benefit. When America was creating its version of capitalism, it built a system of capitalism to help people who are actually victims, who are marginalized. And that was a very good thing. We are proud of our country for that. But selfish people take advantage of this on a regular basis. They want to pretend to be victims so that they can steal from the people who are actually victims, who are actually the ones who have less than. It's just another form of selfish politics. It's just another power grab, and it is not Christ-like. When Jesus was put on trial, before he was killed, Pilate called for Jesus to be brought to him. "Are you the king of the Jews?" he asked him. Jesus replied, "Is this your own question, or did others tell you about me?" And I think this is brilliant. Every time Jesus is doing something like this, he's brilliant. But Jesus always responds to a question with a question. And in this question, he is trying to figure out why Pilate is asking what he's asking. So Pilate wants to know, is Jesus using his power for leverage, for personal gain? Is Jesus trying to form an army? Is Jesus trying to become a political leader? Is Jesus trying to use his power for leverage over people? Or is Jesus actually innocent? Is Jesus actually a victim in this arrest and in this trial? And Pilate says, "Am I a Jew?" Pilate retorted, "Your own people and their leading priests brought you to me for trial. Why? What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not an earthly kingdom. If it were, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over to the Jewish leaders. But my kingdom is not of this world." In other words, I've got some power. I've got some followers. I am not a victim. Jesus could have played the victim card here. He did not. He's saying, I am not weak. In fact, my kingdom is more powerful than you can even understand. It is not of this world. I am not going to play the victim card. I have power. And Pilate's expecting a power play here. Okay, you have power. What are you going to do with it? Jesus won't play the victim. And he's not going to use his power as leverage to take Pilate's power from him. And Pilate asked Jesus, Where are you from? But Jesus gave no answer. Why don't you talk to me? Pilate demanded. Don't you realize that I have, what does Pilate have? He's proud of it. Don't you realize that I have the power to release you? Or even, and this is just kind of a fleeting thought, I think, in Pilate's mind, like, we're not going this far, really. I have the power to crucify you. Do you know how much power I have, Jesus? You say you have power. Why aren't you fighting back? Jesus, let me give you a lesson in politics 101. This is the point at which you wield your power. It's all about power. Why aren't you fighting back? Why aren't you trying to get me to release you? Then Jesus said, you would have no power. Oh, Jesus, careful. You would have no power over me at all unless it were given to you from above. Again, Jesus is saying something that Paul says later, is that if there is somebody in power in our world, it is somebody who God allowed to be there or put in that place. The irony is that Pilate has power, but he's living in fear. Fear of the mob, fear of Caesar, fear of some kind of revolution or an uprising of some kind. He's got all the power, but he's living in fear. And it seems like Jesus has no power, but he's fearless. How is this possible, Jesus? Why aren't you fighting back? And how are you so fearless when you seem to have no power? Why? Because his strength comes from his love. His strength comes from a place that power cannot access. Christians, we've been fighting with the wrong kind of power. So today, I'm not going to tell you which bubble you should fill in on your ballot on Tuesday, but I will tell you who to vote for. Vote for people who are truly victims. Vote for the outcast. Vote for the marginalized. Vote for the poor. Because if you help the poor, you are lending to the Lord, and he will repay you. Live generously, and God will be generous to you. Give to others, and God will give to you. Take care of others, and God will take care of you. Check this out. I saw this poll recently. Did you know that so-called evangelicals are less likely to vote for a candidate who they believe will help people who are different than them? Evangelicals are less likely to vote for the forgotten people and more likely to vote based on the candidate who they think will help themselves. If you want to talk about a tragedy, if you want to talk about a horror in our world, it is Christians who vote selfishly. And statistically, they vote more selfishly than other people. That is a tragedy. Christians should vote for the agenda that will do the most good for the most people. We should be the ones who are voting to help the least of these. Before we decide who we're going to vote for, we have to decide to vote for people who will help the people who are in need, who will help the people who need the help most. Resist the temptation to vote selfishly. Vote to help people who cannot help themselves. Vote for the true victims. Then trust God to take care of you. Then trust God to take care of your needs. Jesus resisted the devil. When he tempted him to be selfish. Then, after he resisted the devil went away, and angels came and took care of Jesus. So if you take care of people, God tells you to take care of them, and you do it, then God will take care of you. Next week, we're going to talk about fear. And about how so often in our world, people try to use fear to get us to be self-focused and to divide from people and divide and separate ourselves from the people that they tell us to be scared of. Because no matter who wins on Tuesday or whenever we find out who wins, there will be people who will be afraid, no matter who it is. But perfect love, not power, perfect love expels all fear. Not strength, perfect love expels all fear. Don't be afraid. Whatever power is given to a political leader is given to them by God, and he is in control. Trust him. Don't trust in your power. Don't trust in who you're voting on. Trust in God, not in the power of government, not in the power of a vote. Trust God, because God says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sins and restore their land. And I'm not saying all of this because I think we should become less involved with politics. I definitely don't think that. I'm saying it because I believe that God has a plan for this nation. I believe that he has called us to do benevolent good in our world. I believe that he has called us to do what many nations throughout history have not done, as they seek to accumulate power, as they seek to fight to take land from people, as they seek to fight to take away from other people. We have been called to be benevolent, to be generous, and to love, to give up our power for the benefit of others. And I believe that if we will seek that good, that he will restore this land and he will do more through America in the future than he has done in the past. If we will seek him first and obey his commands. God, today I thank you for how you have made a way for us in this incredible nation to participate in democracy, to have a voice, to select our leaders. God, I pray that you would give us the courage to cast a vote selflessly, to vote for those people that we believe will actually do the most good in the world. And we won't get it always right. Our math will be wrong sometimes. Our research will be wrong sometimes. Our sources of information will be wrong sometimes. But God, I believe with all my heart that you hold all these things in your hand, that you are drawing people to yourself and you are helping people that we cannot. Let us not trust power to accomplish what only you can accomplish, what only the ultimate power can accomplish. And in the meantime, we will set our minds on love, on graciousness, on generosity, as you taught us to do when you were here on earth, and as you continue to teach us to do today. We love you and thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for tuning in to New Life Gillette. For more information, visit us on the web at www.newlifegillette.com. You can also find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And always remember, Jesus loves you very much, and he died to give you new life.